Welcome to the Full FX podcast, Currency Matters, with me, Colin Lambert. We will get to this week's guest in just a very short time. First, though, we've got to talk benchmarks still. We covered this to a degree in the last podcast 2 weeks ago. However, since then, we've published a story on April 19th discussing what is now seems to be a live alternative to the WM 4pm fix. The story has elicited no little feedback, I have to say. And, you know, quite a lot of it was heated, as always seems to be the case with the benchmark. What I do think we need to focus on now is what does this mean for the users of the fix? Because there is now a regulated, viable alternative that has been tried and tested with the trade. And I totally accept this, you know, one day does not make a successful product, but it's a repeatable process. So where does this leave the users of the fix, the 4pm fix at the moment? Because for many, many years now, they've hidden behind, oh, you know, it's too onerous to change the paperwork. It will cost me too much money. I've got all these end investors I've got to worry about. Is it really worth me doing this? Well, first of all, the sort of cost savings or execution improvements being claimed, certainly I would imagine if they're in the hundreds of dollars per million, would make up for any, I guess, documentation changes you'd have to do. So I don't think that's really an argument anymore. I guess the interesting one is like, you know, what will the end users do or the users of the fix do? Will they ignore the fact there's now a choice and, you know, again, hide behind the paperwork excuse? Or do we think they'll actually investigate the alternative to see how it works, whether it would work for them? You know, the FX Global Code and the Global FX Committee have been pretty firm on this throughout. Asset manager or users of benchmark fixes should regularly check that the fix is appropriate for their business. Now, maybe that needs to be twisted a little bit by saying, well, maybe they need to make sure, you know, is the benchmark fix they are using the best they can offer for their investors? It's an interesting one. I still think it's going to take some time. I don't think we see this change overnight, but it's very hard, I think, for anyone in the investment game to ignore people claiming a savings per million in the hundreds of dollars. It may be that, you know, the underlying assets are revalued to the same thing and it doesn't really matter to them, although I still think less market impact is a better thing. And actually, yes, it does create a little bit of tracking error, but it would create positive tracking error if some managers are on a longer fix. I also think, you know, and this is a tricky one. You know, I mentioned this a few weeks ago that, you know, there are whispers of some legal firms that were heavily involved in going after the banks now looking at the use of the fix and their general FX execution styles. Now, you know, these whispers coming back to me, it could be they're going full circle. It's very hard to tell. And until somebody actually sort of plants a legal document on a desk, then we won't really know. But it's definitely something worth watching. And I think at the very least, if you're on the buy side using the WMR fix, you need to at least make a show of looking at what else is out there now, because otherwise that is something that could come back to bite you on the backside. I mentioned the Global Foreign Exchange Committee there, and the early signs for me, and we're still in the feedback process, there's still an opportunity for people to feed back to the GFXC on the proposed changes to the Global Code. But the early indication to me is actually the GFXC is on a winner with their templates. I've spoken over the years to quite a few on the buy side that have recognized the Global Code, you know, with a grudging nod, haven't seen it as being in any way relevant to them. And generally speaking, have said, look, it's a sell side document to solve a sell side issue. I think we've managed to beat that argument over the last year and a half, maybe. I think the GFXC has done a good job of that. But those same people are now telling me that the templates, particularly around disclosures, they're less fussed about the algos. I think, generally speaking, algos, you know, most providers offer a good explanation of where the liquidity is sourced for their algos. But especially around disclosures, I'm getting a lot of feedback from people saying, like, actually, they really like the ability that this will give them to directly compare provider by provider and how they're treated. And I mean, one which I think will be music to the ears of the GFXC, or hopefully would be, one manager turned around and said to me that the development of the templates, assuming they are rolled out, and I can't see why they wouldn't be, creates a much fairer market environment for the buy side. And that was kind of one of the initial aims of the global code, to create a fair market environment for everybody, not just sell or buy side. So hopefully, feedback will be received on that. There's still opportunity for you to get your feedback in. But yeah, early signs to me are that the templates in particular are going to be a winner. Final thing from me, I guess, just a bit of housekeeping, really. Tuesday the 27th of April, 1 p.m. London, 8 a.m. New York. I'm moderating a discussion on AI and machine learning in foreign exchange markets. It's sponsored by Mosaic Smart Data. We've got a great lineup of speakers, all of whom, well, I would say all of whom are more intelligent than me, but to be fair, that's just about everybody that ever comes on any panel I've ever done. There's still opportunity to register. It's free. Just, go to the website, click on the link and register. I think we're above 250 registrations with a week to go, which is great. Get in there. I listened to a webinar, I think, earlier this week, and it was a series of statements. I think I can promise you that, although it has been a while since I've done one of these, this will not be a series of statements. We will be having a proper dialogue. And I do have my zingers ready in case someone starts to really sell on this thing. So with that in mind, please sign up to that webinar on Tuesday, April 27th. We'll be back in just a moment with my guest for this week, who hopefully will have an interest in my trade of the year.
The Full Effects newsletter carries exclusive content that doesn't appear on our website. If you want to know the latest people moves, read about some of the stranger aspects of our industry, and keep up to date on Colin Lambert's trade of the year, then register now at thefulleffects.com. It's free and delivered to your inbox every Tuesday.
So I'm joined by Stephen Saywell, who's strategic advisor to fintech financial research digitization firm Limeglass, a firm he joined just last month. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Colin. Very nice to be here.
Obviously, you've been on an interesting journey, working in research. And I think, regular listeners to the podcast will be distraught that I'm not going to ask you about my Shekel MEX trade of the year, which for the listeners is actually currently up 1.2%, having been down 4%. But I guess what we want to talk about today is how the face of research is changing and what providers in this space can actually do to survive and thrive in that change. I mean, I've used this anecdote before. When I was working on the buy side, I used to be faced with a rainforest worth of faxes on the machine every morning. Then there'll be an information dump via Reuters dealing or chat channels. And then more recently, that was kind of dealt with by the fetch model that a lot of banks delivered, in terms of like all the research goes into a portal and clients can just pick and choose how they take it. The trouble is there is so much of it, isn't there? So what do you think we have to do? How do research providers evolve from here to make sure their content gets read by the right people?
Sure. Okay. Well, look, a lot of questions in there. I'm going to start off by saying I'm glad you're not going to ask me about Shekel MEX, because I'm not convinced I would give a coherent answer to that at the moment. So thank you for that. But look, moving back to research, you're right. I think it's changed a lot over the years. So I started in financial markets 25 years ago or so, and I think it's fair to say that back in those days, on the trading floor with clients even, but particularly on the trading floor, research was often seen as optional. That was quite tough for someone whose job it was to write research. However, I think, look, the really positive news for fans of research, people who use it a lot, is that has changed dramatically over the past 20 years. And I think it's going to continue to change. And what I mean by that is that research is becoming much more important for financial markets, much more important as a differentiator with the client. And as we've all seen, as electronic markets have really taken over, price has not been the big differentiator in markets across asset classes. And increasingly, it's research that is seen as the key differentiator. So I think that's a starting point I would focus on. Having said that, I think banks are cottoning onto that. They're seeing that. And exactly as you just said, there's a rush to supply it. And I think what's happened here is there's an oversupply of research on the markets to such an extent that I think there are real challenges for not just the clients who, I know from speaking to many clients directly, their inboxes just totally chock-a-block full of research, very hard for them to know which one to open, which one is relevant. But secondly, and also importantly, it's hard for the salespeople because the point is that for the top end of the sales game now, the key role that these people have now is to market research content. And I think that's even tricky for them. If they're working for a large bank that is producing, maybe at least 100 pieces a day, very hard for the salespeople to know which document to market, which document to open for the client.
So does that, like the digitization process, I guess that LimeGlass is involved in, and one of the reasons why you've joined is, does this process start maybe with the bank sales desks and then move out to the clients?
Yes, I think absolutely. That's a good way to do it. And I'll give you a very quick anecdote. I spent 20 years of my career writing research, in my case, largely in the foreign exchange macro sides. But then later in my career, very late actually, just a few years ago, I shifted to a very new and innovative role where my job was to market the research content across asset classes, which was a challenge for me, but specifically to our top 10 clients, which largely were 10 of the biggest funds in the world. And what really was an eye-opener to me was, and it's very sad actually, was how little of the research that the team was writing was actually getting read and absorbed by the client. And it was very sad because the research is top-notch. All these banks are writing fantastic things, really insightful, great trade ideas, great thematic pieces. But the challenge of getting it through to the sale, to the right PM particularly, is a struggle.
Do you think there's a change coming, a change has come around? You mentioned thematic research and trade ideas. I mean, is one style getting more eyes on it for the moment?
Yes, I think that's the case because one of the trends we've already touched on very slightly, but I'd like to go into a bit more detail, is the clients are increasingly wanting to be covered on a multi-asset basis. So what I mean by that is your traditional FX PM or rates PM doesn't just want to speak to an FX salesperson or a rate salesperson or read research about that. They want to look at all the asset classes because there might be something interesting that they're missing, maybe going on in credit or something. So I think what a lot of the banks are doing is shifting to a thematic approach in writing their research, but having all the asset classes contribute to that piece. So as an example, there might be a big piece coming out on the rise in US inflation, very topical at the moment, and contributing to that piece will be all that the research teams in the bank, which again makes it trickier for the salesperson to market a piece where they just used to rates or credit or equities.
And I guess the other thing there, the first thing that sprung to my mind was all of a sudden they're trying to market a bigger piece at a time when probably the people who they're trying to get to read it have less time.
Yes, this is exactly the case. And my experience was that the salespeople are really struggling. They're working at these amazing banks with phenomenal research teams. Great quality pieces that can be real differentiators, but it's very difficult for them to access that library, shall we say? So they really need a solution whereby they can dig in, they can find something they need in a timely manner and get that to the client so that that piece becomes a real differentiator both for the salesperson, for the bank, and ultimately to bring in the business.
Something struck me there, you said actually, around the digitization process. So does this mean that going forward that we could be delivering the appropriate research? We've got natural language processing tools in most institutions now. Does this mean at some stage we're looking at a process where the salesperson or the bank can deliver a section of a piece of research effectively directly to the client's price, decision-making engine?
Yes, that's exactly the case. Because, look, I think there is progress within the banks, but, look, the feedback I consistently hear from clients is that the research tools at the banks just really aren't, you know, delivering what they want to do, that they need more digitization. And so I think what Limeglass is trying to do with their excellent product is to facilitate that, so that the banks can deliver a specific trade idea or a specific piece, you know, often at paragraph level, to clients. And, you know, I think that would help the clients enormously who otherwise would be faced with this huge inbox of research from so many different banks on so many different topics.
All delivered at the same time of day as well.
Probably, yes.
Showing the usual imagination of the banking industry, if I may say so. Everyone delivers at 7 a.m. Yeah, I mean, so the you talk about differentiation there. So are we talking about, I guess, a different style of efficiency here, aren't we? Because, you know, everyone's obsessed with workflow efficiency. We do still need to get ideas out there then. So are we sort of looking at the differentiator being, A, how much time you can save your client, and actually how relevant and how brief you can make this information?
Yes, I think that's absolutely the key. And, you know, there's another trend. This leads us into another trend that's going on in the industry that, you know, I think is only just starting. What's happening is the sales teams at these banks are really being forced to split in half. And what I mean by this is most banks are deciding to split their teams into high touch and low touch. So low touch salespeople will become liquidity experts. So often, by definition, they'll be speaking to execution desks. High touch salespeople will be speaking directly, or are, and will continue to be speaking directly to the PMs themselves. So the key point for them, their key role, will be to market research content. And, you know, as we started out by saying, a lot of salespeople aren't particularly well equipped to do this. You know, they haven't grown up with it. It's a challenge for them. But secondly, they're faced with this huge library of research from their banks, which is very intimidating. So if they can access this and deliver that key piece to a client that they know will make a difference, or maybe a client has come back with a reverse inquiry, if they can supply that in a timely and efficient manner, it makes a huge difference to the banks. And, you know, this is really the way the business is going.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess that's the other thing as well, because obviously anticipating client interest is one thing, but obviously it can't be done all the time. So the sales team is also going to be looking at the client, communicating through whatever means, and saying, what have you got for me on Colombian bonds? Or indeed, Shekel Mex.
Well, they're both excellent examples. And, you know, why they're so excellent is that they're not topics that would come up very often in normal conversation. But this is exactly the type of example that, you know, Mr. Hedge Fund will likely think is going to be the next big thing. And how's he going to find out about that? He won't have anything in his fund. So he'll turn to his best and most able salesperson. And that salesperson will be Fomex, because, you know, how on earth is a salesperson going to know what's happening with Colombian bonds? But do you know what? Most banks, or particularly banks specializing in LATAM or EM research, will have a piece on Colombian bonds. We'll have probably a very good piece on Colombian bonds, which would have probably have gone unnoticed. But what the challenge for that salesperson is to access it quickly, and specifically access the relevant information for this trader. Is it the bond market? Is it pricing? Is it the currency? Is it intervention? What's going to happen? So if he or she can access that, get it to the client quickly, again, amazing business relationship. And, you know, that's what the future of this business is.
So this all starts then with digitizing the core research at source.
Yes, I think this is it. So the key point is a lot of the research that these banks is writing comes in an unstructured form, and that makes it very, very difficult to access it, to know where to go. And what Limeglass is offering is the atomization, particularly at paragraph level, which makes the whole thing a lot more accessible. And, you know, that's really the key for accessing these vast libraries of research. To be able to look in and pick out exactly what you want is very challenging. And so we need a solution to assist this.
And if I may be a little bit mischievous as well, I suppose the salesperson does have one benefit. With this sort of solution, they're not going to have every research analyst out there saying, tell them about my stuff.
Well, do you know, this is an interesting point because, you know, as you know, if you work in these big banks, they can become very siloed. You know, you have the research team, you have the sales team, you have the trading team, you have the senior management team, all probably looking at quite different things. And, you know, I think it's quite normal. Probably I put myself in the same situation. If you're the research guy, you probably think every word you write is being doted on by the clients. But unfortunately, even if the client wanted to do that, they couldn't do that. So exactly as you said, you know, the real challenge is to be able to delve into it.
I think, yeah, we've touched on it a couple of times, but I mean, how challenging is it to deliver this in a cross-asset environment, particularly when, you know, there are different drivers of a particular either trade idea or demand from a client? And I guess the other thing I would probably, you know, ask you is, if you're looking at sort of cross-asset class research, where do you sort of bring in correlations? Because obviously correlations exist in markets very fleetingly sometimes, but they do exist. So, you know, is it also then a question of saying, okay, well, we're writing this, and I'll use a basic example, writing this about the Aussie. We've got this piece over here about iron ore, which should be part of it. How do you bring all that together? I mean, it looks like a huge challenge to me to bring all that together.
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. And, you know, I think that really gets back to this thematic approach to research. So look at this from the client's perspective. What they want to know is, okay, Australia and iron ore, what is going on in Australia and iron ore? And we've got a theme. That's your theme. So one of these big top investment banks will write a big piece on this. You know, there's been a huge surge in the iron ore price because of something that's going on in China. That's going to benefit lots of countries. Obviously, Australia with Brazil is one of the big producers. So let's write about that. Then, and this is where it gets interesting, what are the asset class implications? And this is where the head of each research team will come in. What does that mean for the Australian dollar? What does that mean for interest rates in Australia? What does that mean for the credit market in Australia? What does that mean for Australian equities? And you can get that all in one piece. So that's it's a really nice example you brought up, Colin, of the way the industry is going and really the way the client would like that that strategy and that information delivered.
Well, this podcast has a guarantee. We have one semi-reasonable question every episode. And clearly we've just had it. So we'll go back to my usual nonsense questions. I mean, I guess to close out then, I mean, how would you say, I mean, if we're going to have this discussion in 2-3 years' time, how do you think the research environment will look? Because it's gone through traumatic change over the last 2 years. You know, you've highlighted a great personal example earlier. How do you think it looks in the next 2-3 years?
Okay, again, a great question. If I can, you know, as we all try to do in financial markets, gaze into my crystal ball and predict the future, which we're all trying to do from 6 o'clock in the morning until we go to sleep. Look, I think I'd go back to a couple of key points here. One, research is becoming more important. It is becoming a very much a differentiator. And we spoke about the reasons for that. The role of the salesperson is changing. And like it or not, every, you know, high-touch salesperson has to become more and more competent at delivering research content to the client. And that creates a lot of challenges, but also a lot of opportunities for the banks, because what it means is research is becoming, or is already and will continue to become, a significant differentiator. And it's the challenges around that and that delivery that I think is going to dominate markets across all asset classes going forward.
I mean, it's certainly going to be a very interesting couple of years in this space, because I mean, I'm doing something next week on AI and machine learning, and this kind of speaks to that in many ways. And it's become clear to me it's still very, very early days. So I think there's a lot of potential upside there. And to be fair, I tend to agree with you. I mean, being an ex-trader, I do tend to give anybody that's not a trader a bit of a hard time. You know, the strategists and analysts do come up with some really good stuff. And I do sometimes think to myself, I wish I was still sitting in the trading chair because I've just read something there and it was really good. So if it gives them the opportunity to get read some more, then all power to them. Stephen, thank you very much for your time today. That was fascinating. It's just another aspect of our industry that's changing.
Thank you very much for having me on, Colin. It was great. And you know, hopefully I can come back sometime and update everyone on the themes.
Well, I mean, we'll have a Shekel-Mex episode, no doubt. But only if the trade actually makes some money.
Well, I think I'll leave you to be the expert on that one. I'm not sure I can add too much.
believe me, I literally went, sell it. I had no reason behind it. It's usually, it normally works out well. Anyway, to our listeners, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back soon with another podcast. And yeah, have a great week in between. Thanks a lot.